Hi, and welcome to Northwest Book Talk. I'm Patty Gresher, and today I'm joined by author Michelle St. Romaine. Now, Michelle, she's a writer, an educator, and a workshop leader. Her work explores memory, ancestry, and the powerful threads that connect generations. She's the co-author of two poetry collections and has taught creative writing across California, Hawaii, and Oregon. Her debut novel, Song of Belonging, is a beautifully layered multi-generational story infused with touches of magical realism. It weaves together past and present as one woman uncovers the hidden legacy of the women who came before her. The book has already won a Reader's Favorite 5-star award and is sure to continue to be a Reader's Favorite for many years. Michelle will lead a creative writing workshop at the Northwest Book Fair, which we are very excited to have her do. So, Michelle, welcome to Northwest Book Talk.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here.
So let's start from the very, very beginning. So what first inspired you to write Song of Belonging?
Yeah, so that is a story that goes back a long ways. I have loved writing in books literally from my earliest memory. I am just one of those people for whom books and stories and writing is a first love. I have memories of holding books as a very young child before I could read and just being in wonder at them and deciding very early that if I could write something that people would read, that could be that would be a successful life. So I've wanted to write for decades. This story in particular is a story. It took a long time before I did novel writing. As you said, I started as a poet in college, and I've worked in the nonprofit field for most of my adult life and used writing in that way, working on causes I care about. But about 10 years ago, I decided I really want to write a novel. I want to try and see what I can do in that form and set this goal out for myself. And I have a deep love of ancestor stories. I've always been interested in ancestor stories. And I grew up in a really wonderful culture, French Louisiana, South Louisiana. On both sides of my family, the French lineage goes back a couple of hundred years. And I grew up with aunts and uncles speaking French and English and strong French culture, the food, the music, all of it. So when I sat down to write, it was pretty clear that what I wanted to do was tell some stories of my ancestors, because those are the stories that had really been singing in my head for decades.
So that is very interesting. When I first opened the book and it was about these ancestors, you kind of go back from, you kind of flip back and forth from one period of life to another. And for me, that was very interesting because I don't really have those stories that go way back. And so that was kind of like a whole new experience to kind of go into that multi-generational writing, which like roots or something, but a whole different way. What about the magical realism that you kind of dropped into the story and kind of wove it in together? Was that also part of your heritage, that kind of mystical background?
So that's a great question. So, the term magical realism is a literary term. It's a term that we use to describe stories where it's the real world as we understand it, and kind of magical, what we consider to be magical things happen in that world, and we come as a reader to accept them as kind of normal and as an important part of the story. So I would say I grew up in a world, a culture, like many cultures shaped by the water. I grew up very near the Gulf of Mexico and with the rivers and waters, ways all around us. I grew up in a culture with kind of stories that go way back and a storytelling kind of culture. Within that, we never would have called it magical realism, but I would say there was an element of that, of accepting kind of the supernatural, that which is beyond what we see and understand as a part of life. I will say for sure that I've been reading forever and ever, and my North Stars are some of the greats in this genre. Well, Toni Morrison, I think, is one of the best writers of our the century, the last century and a half. Isabel Allende. I love Alice Hoffman's work. So there are many, many great authors who write in this, who write literary fiction, but with this magical realism piece to it. And I've been reading them for generations, you know, for a long time, well, generations, for decades. And so it just felt very natural to me to kind of aim in that direction as I wrote this story.
And there's another element that comes through, I think, very strongly through your book, and that is some of your descriptions are almost poetic. And so I'm just wondering, catching the element of description in almost a poetic form, do you think that working with poetry for so many years before influenced your writing?
Oh, it absolutely did. Absolutely did. I had a book launch event this past weekend, and the co-author of the two poetry books, Almarosa Alvarez, I live in Southern Oregon, and she is on the English faculty at Southern Oregon University, and she was in the audience, and she asked me the question, which I kind of laughed because she knew the answer, but it was great to have a conversation, and that was the question, was how do you go from writing poetry to writing fiction? And as I shared then, I think of poetry as like these small sculptures you create. An idea comes, or for me, a phrase will come, or an image, and I catch it, and I sit down, and I write whatever comes, and then I work with it. And you can kind of hold a piece of poetry in your hand and keep sculpting it. I think that practice of doing that definitely, definitely helped me in writing this novel, because it is very place-based. It is very... the imagery and the description is really important, I think, for the reader to be able to really get a sense of, first of all, this French Louisiana culture, but also the current day story about this young woman who is having her great-grandmother's memories. She lives on the West Coast. She's trying very, very hard to live the life that she wants to live as a writer. And then all of these things start happening to her. She's having her great-grandmother's memories. And the work of trying to bring the reader into that kind of experience, writing poetry, I think definitely was helpful to me for that. And I would really take my time in those passages and work with it almost like I work with a piece of poetry to capture in a small passage a lot with a lot of layer in it.
Yeah, I think that, and that element also, I think, might even be one of the reasons that you won that 5-star Reader's Favorite Award, because it's just well woven together in a beautiful way.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
So let's start, though, go back a little bit more with you. When you first wanted to write this novel, what were some of the first things that you did? This was your very first one, so you weren't, you know, didn't have a lot of backlog of what to do. What were your steps for starting out?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And, well, how about if I tell you a little bit about where the story came from in my brain, and then that would help to help share a little bit of the steps. So in the story, Alice is the main character, and she's, you know, in her 20s, and she's living on the West Coast. She's one of three sisters who grew up in New Orleans in this big French family. She moves to the West Coast and is pursuing her career. And then one morning, she wakes up in Berkeley in a new apartment. She's kind of disoriented. And she unpacks a box and finds this jewelry box that her great-grandmother had given to her decades earlier when Alice was 7 and her great-grandmother had just passed away. So, you know, first she remembers receiving it. So the reader learns a little bit about the great-grandmother and the story. And it's been put away for like 10 years. So she opens it, and when she opens it, it has kind of this Pandora's box piece to it, where then all of these things start happening. It's almost like in opening that jewelry box at this point in her life, all of the stories of her ancestors are opened and begin to insert themselves in her life and really force her to look at her life and then to look back in her own family stories and make some decisions about her life. Well, when I was 7, my great-grandmother left me a green jewelry box. So that piece of the story is based on actual fact. From there, it's all fiction. It's all made up. Yes. It is all inspired by listening to stories of my parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents and great-grandparents and lots of older cousins. I come from a huge family. But it's fiction from that point on. But when I was seven, my mother's mother's mother, my great-grandmother, passed away. And the day before her funeral, her daughter, my great-aunt, handed me this green jewelry box, and she said, "Little Graham wanted you to have this." And I was just, I still remember this moment. I remember her putting it in my hand, and I thought, why me? And I said that because there were lots of grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and she said, I don't know, but she said she wanted me to make sure I gave it to you. And I remember opening it, and so the scene where Alice remembers it, all of that is pretty close to my memory of what happened and the setting and the African violets in this little room in New Orleans. Now, when I opened the jewelry box, there was nothing in it. So my brain, of course, began to, a storyteller that I have been forever, started to kind of, I think, create stories in it. And I did think about what did this hold, and that idea of all the stories that came before me. So I think that the story was actually born in that moment when I was 7 years old, but it, you know, decades later before I began to write something with it. In the story, there is a letter, as you know, and other things that the great-grandmother leaves Alice, and that was all made up, but that's where it started. So I started with some passages around that, and I just let the story begin to lead itself. And then, you know, quite honestly, the New Orleans story, so the story that's set in, it's the dual timeline. So the current day where we're following Alice in her life on the West Coast, and then it goes back and forth to her great-grandmother, the one who left the jewelry box for her, writing to her young daughter who has just passed away, and it's a big mystery, and the story kind of hinges around that. That whole piece set in the 1930s in rural Louisiana really just kind of rolled out of me. I've joked that I think my female ancestors have been just hanging out with me, waiting for me to write stories. And that story of the great-grandmother feels like it just kind of rolled out of me. So there's a lot more. You know, I did a lot of work. I applied to and was accepted to a year-long women's writing program for literary authors. Worked with lots of people over several years to get it to where I feel like it was ready to go into the world. Right. Lots of back and forth, lots of revisions, lots of working with making sure that the arcs of the characters in the two timelines flowed in the way that I wanted the reader to experience them. And it changed quite a bit. The end story is quite different than where it started in the beginning when I started writing it in 2018.
Okay, so you were at it for about seven years.
Yeah, I started it Mother's Day of 2018, and I finished it the evening after dropping my son off at college, University of Oregon. I rented a very expensive room for myself right on the coast to finish it, and I waited to write the prologue that night, wrote it with the door open and the ocean crashing outside, and wrote the epilogue. I wrote the epilogue that evening, and that was in September of 2023. And then it went through some revision, and it was a fall of 2024 that it was accepted by She Writes Press for publication.
So what was your process in getting it accepted? Did you have an agent? Did you send out a lot of letters? What was the struggle there?
So She Writes Press, you don't need an agent. So I submitted it directly to them. And I had met Brooke Warner, who is the owner, the senior editor, of the whole press and the founder of She Writes Press. I had met her actually in the fall of 2018 at a writer's conference when I just started it. And she was interested in the story at that time. And her interest in it and her words of really encouraging words about where I had the story at that time really was a big part of keeping me going. So I was really thrilled to go back to them. I submitted it to them, and they had a couple of suggestions to strengthen it. So a little bit more developmental editing, which I did. And then we did a final agreement and contract. So it's not with an agent, it's directly with them.
I like that thread. You said a thread between She Writes Press that kind of motivated you to keep going, because I think that's what we all need. We need that affirmation by a real person that kind of helps us to see a project like writing this through. Would you say there was any other people that with the writing that had writing influence besides all the books and things that you read?
Oh, many, many. So I was very happy to be accepted to work with Kate Moses, who's a literary author. She lives on the East Coast. And so to do some one-on-one work with her, she has a writing program for women who are writing either memoir or literary fiction. And so I reached out to her, submitted some work to her, and the book was still in process. And she accepted me to work with her. I worked with her for about 6 months one-on-one, and then she invited me to be a fellow in her year-long program called Book Garden, and that was really remarkable. And that was a one-year program. There are five of us in the program, five women from all over the country, in a one-year, very, very intensive program, all of us working on either a novel or a literary fiction novel, a memoir or literary fiction novel. We met every week for a few hours. We would each meet once a week individually with Kate on our writing. And then we had 2 week-long residencies in the Adirondacks. And so that was very instrumental. Kate and the women I worked with really, really helped me to keep moving with getting it going. Lots of friends, you know, early readers. Certainly my family who listened and kept supporting me. And I found just a great deal of support. And then there's a lot of authors here in Southern Oregon who have been just amazing, amazing, really great support team to keep me going. And we're all cheering each other on, several of them working on their next novel. So it's all wonderful. And I would like to just give one little shout out here. I'm very excited. So there were 5 of us in that Book Garden program. Mine is the first one to be published. One of my dear writing friends now who was in the program, Tara Badstubner, her book is about to be released in the fall, in September, by Sibylline Press. Very excited about that. It's called Every Room Remembers. So keep an eye out for that one as well. Tara was in that program with me as well.
So one of the things that you bring out that I think is important to share is that though writing is a single endeavor, obviously, there's still a need for some support, some guidance, some structure. And you yourself lead some writing workshops. So tell us about your experience, maybe first starting your first workshop and how it has made a difference with the writers you've helped and maybe even yourself as you help other writers.
Yes, I've actually been thinking a lot about this. It is true that writing is solitary. It's absolutely true. But I also think we have to remember storytelling is communal. Storytelling, whether that's poetry, long-form fiction, memoir writing, anything, any kind of storytelling is communal. It's one of our oldest forms of art and community and connection. So I think that it's really important. I know there's some authors who do it alone mostly, but for me and for many, many people I know, that communal connection is critical. So I started long ago as an English teacher for a while, and I asked the principal, this was way back, I was teaching middle school, and I said, could I please teach a creative writing class and maybe offer it to the students who are really kind of high level in English and who I don't think are being challenged enough? And she said, sure, design it and let's see. And it was such a magical experience. I loved it. So I started there, and then I continued. I left teaching in a classroom. But then when our kids were young, I volunteered in the school to continue to teach creative writing to kids. And then I moved to working with adults in creative writing a few years ago. And it just started with me, people who were curious about this journey I was on, invited a group of friends to come and hang out in my living room one afternoon and do some writing workshops together. And then it very, very quickly evolved. And, you know, I've been leading workshops and retreats of other kinds for decades through my professional work. So it was a really easy crossover. And then it just very, very quickly got bigger and people wanted to get into a full year long program. So I now offer, I offer online workshops. I offer in person kind of retreat afternoons. I offer two full weekend retreats a year, and I offer one-on-one work. And then there are a handful of women who sign up for a full year with me, where they just pay kind of one flat fee, and anything I offer all year, they have access to. And it's been wonderful, and it keeps me going too. And it keeps me, as I prepare for each one, it keeps me thinking and digging deeper, because I really want to offer something of value to people. So it has me really looking deeper into my own process and offering what I can back.
So I love all that. Let's talk just a tiny bit on a retreat. What would a weekend retreat for a beginning writer with you be like?
Yeah, so I will have one in September. They're here in the Rogue Valley, Southern Oregon. Gorgeous place. It's at Hummingbird Estate, which is a winery, and we have this wonderful cottage, and people can either stay on the property or get another place to stay, or there's a lot of, you know, there's local writers. They tend to be pretty small groups, under 10 people. What I do is take us through a weekend. I personalize them, first of all. I will have a theme, and then what I will do is then when I see who's signing up, I find out from each person what they're working on or what they want to get out of it, and I plan based on that. So, for example, say it's somebody who's just starting and they're curious, all the way to people who are, you know, there's a few women working on novels or collections of essays, and so they're in a very different process, a place in the process. We start on Friday early evening, and we go until Sunday early afternoon. And the weekend is sprinkled with times where we're connected and where I'm offering kind of sessions where I have a process through the weekend that takes us from that in the beginning, letting go of what we left behind and really kind of diving into what we want to accomplish. And then Saturday, there's usually three sessions throughout the day that guide us through steps to get us to deepen into our work. And on Sunday is often sharing and then next steps. Then I offer one-on-one in between. I always have art and creative activities available for people, because I think writing is not just, it's not just words. It's, we're inspired by all kinds of things. So I use other types of creative process, and then it's in a beautiful natural setting. So that's kind of the format of it. But really, I think some of what's the most enriching for everyone is the connection and the conversations between people. It's all kind of a jumping off point. Everything I present is a jumping off point for discussion for everyone to deepen into their work.
So I imagine that some lasting friendships are kind of made from these weekends.
Oh, absolutely. So absolutely. The women in the year-long program have their own little group chat. They meet outside on their own often to do writing in between workshops. Everything I do as well, I people leave with all the materials of everything I've done so that they don't have to kind of hold it all in. I often draw from works of writing that I love. I draw from great writing teachers' works. Bring all that there so people can look at it. And then when they leave, they have it all written in a handout so they can go back and explore more. And then they also always leave with follow-up next step activities to keep the process going. Whether they continue with me or our group or not, it's, they leave with more so it doesn't just end. Yeah, it's a wonderful group of women who've kind of formed around this, and definitely friendships and writing groups that have formed and reading groups outside of it of women who've connected through these Women Write workshops.
So our final question is that you will be leading a workshop at the Northwest Book Fair and Media Fest called Stories That Shape Us, Writing Inspired by Memory, Family, and the Past. So can you kind of explain what the attendees would get in that 1 hour free workshop?
Yes, I'm really excited about this. What I want to offer to people in this workshop is a mini taste kind of the process that I used in writing Song of Belonging. It starts with, are your ancestors whispering to you? And if so, are you listening? Because I believe our ancestor stories are with us. I believe they're in our bones. And I believe that, you know, there's a lot available to us. And no matter what we believe, we can open, I think, at the very least in our imagination, to what might be there. So we'll talk a little bit. I'll do a little bit to kind of get everybody relaxed and warmed up and connected. And then I'm going to offer some writing prompts to get us each to dive a little bit into this question. Well, if my ancestors were talking to me, what might they be saying? What might they be asking? And I'll guide us through a process of writing and some sharing. It'll depend on the number of people in the room, how we'll do that. I think it's important to share as well, because we externalize a little bit and it brings us a little bit more into our own bodies and experience when we at least turn to one other person and share a little bit. And then we'll see what gets created from that. I'll share a little bit of my own process, as well as some great reading for people to look at. As I said, people like Toni Morrison, Alice Hoffman, others. And then people will leave with a handout of ways to continue this type of writing if they want to do it. So it's kind of exploration of into our ancestors' past. What's there? What is there, and what might the message be for us if there was one?
So thank you, Michelle, for being with us today and for sharing your journey and your beautiful story, Song of Belonging.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here, and I'm very, very excited to be at the fair coming up and to lead a workshop. And yeah, I appreciate you inviting me on.
Okay. So I've been talking today with Michelle St. Romain. She's the author of Song of Belonging, a powerful and beautifully written novel about ancestry, memory, and finding your place in the world. You can learn more about Michelle, her writing, and her workshops by visiting her website and following her on social media. All her links will be on Northwest Book Talk. You can look up Michelle and see all the connections that you can make from there. So thank you for joining me today on Northwest Book Talk. I'm Patty Grasher, helping authors connect with readers one story at a time. Join us for the Northwest Book Fair and Media Fest Saturday, June 27th at Clark College in Vancouver. This free, family-friendly event features over 100 local authors and media creators, hands-on workshops, and exciting panels that feature storytelling in the Pacific Northwest. Meet your next favorite author or media creator and be part of a vibrant creative community. Learn more at northwestbookfair.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
우리는 여러분의 언어를 구사합니다.
我们说你的语言.
Nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
중도의 nói ngôn ngữ của bạn.
For over 20 years, Vancouver Family Magazine has been covering local news, recreation, travel, education, parenting, personalities, and more. We connect your family to people, places, ideas, organizations, helpful resources, and local stories. Pick up your copy every month at over 300 locations all around Clark County, or read online at vancouverfamilymagazine.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for even more local news and family fun at Vancouver Family.